Hello, and thank you for joining the Gear 6 Spotlight, interviews with industry analysts and experts discussing trends and issues in data center performance. Today's guest is Robin Harris, an industry veteran in data storage marketing and sales and creator and author of StorageMojo.com, an insightful blog devoted to data storage-related topics. Your host for the program is Gary Orenstein, Vice President of Marketing at Gear 6.
Gary, I'm really looking forward to this.
We are too. In August, you completed a four-piece series titled Architecting the Internet Data Center, where you compared the rise of Internet data centers, or IDCs as you call them, with legacy enterprise data centers, or EDCs. And I was wondering if you could give us an outline of some of the basic definitions for these two terms.
Well, I think we all have an idea of what an enterprise data center is. It's a single corporation and their enterprise infrastructure. The real difference is the Internet data center. And I think what distinguishes those is first the scale of the Internet data center. It's typically one to two orders of magnitude larger than an enterprise data center. The growth rate, now they're in a heavy investment mode right now, but they are growing extremely rapidly. For example, it looks like this year Google will almost double the total number of servers that it had. And then another differentiator is the speed of the application rollout that internet data centers typically provide. And if you look at the enterprise, it's not unusual for a major application that's going to be rolled out to maybe a few thousand people to take 18 months to 2 years. In the internet data centers, we typically see applications that are being rolled out to hundreds of thousands or even millions of people, taking more like 6 to 12 months. So it's the scale is different, the speed, the growth rate, it's a very different environment.
Sure. What would you say, just in terms of how these things look, in terms of the differentiation between IDCs and EDCs, just from some of the equipment or maybe the software that's being deployed? Can you outline some of the differences from that perspective?
Well, the IDC that we know the most about is Google, because they've been the most forthcoming about their infrastructure. However, I do have good reason to believe that Amazon, even though it's followed a very long and winding path in terms of its infrastructure, at one point they even bought a mainframe, hoping that would help them with the rapid growth of their business. And they kept it for a year, and then they unplugged it. Amazon appears to have a fairly similar infrastructure. On the hardware side, we see fairly low-cost servers. I believe Google has the lowest cost servers. Amazon uses Blade servers. Microsoft appears to have a taste for somewhat more costly servers and fewer of them. eBay is the one internet data center that seems to be pretty much totally on name brand hardware and software. And Yahoo is a mix. And they appear to have, from a storage perspective, they at least use NetApp storage for their email service, which is the largest web-based mail service out there. So anyway, there's a range out there, and where possible, I've tried to analyze differences between the IDCs. Mm-hmm. The other piece, of course, is that they almost all, as much as possible, use open source software, with the obvious exception of Microsoft and eBay as well, uses
sure.
a lot of commercial software. But I really differentiate Google from the others, because it appears that Google and, to a lesser extent, Amazon, they both appear to have a significant cost advantage over the other IDCs because of their infrastructures.
Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if you could give us your opinion on why you think this rise of the IDC is important to the industry as a whole, and what the impacts that we're seeing and what we might see in the future.
Well, I think there are three main impacts, Gary. First of all, for the first time in information technology history, the enterprise data center is no longer the big dog in the marketplace. Everybody has always focused on the enterprise, people who wanted to make significant amounts of money, companies that wanted to get big, had to focus on the enterprise data centers because these folks spend a lot of money on their infrastructure, and it's the financial services firms. However, now you have Google, for example, and in aggregate the other four or five major IDCs, and they are all by themselves. Google's one of the largest manufacturers of servers in the world. And one example of this impact, just from the scale of what they're doing, is that 4 years ago, you never heard about performance per watt. Well, Google published a paper saying performance per watt is very important to us. And because of the rate at which they are buying servers, suddenly they became a significant force in the marketplace. And now, of course, both Intel and AMD are making a big deal of performance per watt.
Sure, and Google's moving up to be on the river in Oregon to be close to cheap power.
Absolutely.
Or part of them is going up there.
Yes. So there's that impact on the technology. Another impact, I think, is cultural. The people who run the lines of business at various enterprises, they're not stupid, and they see the same thing that I do, which is Google and Yahoo and Amazon rolling out new services at a speed and a frequency that their own enterprise data centers are not equaling, and. The lines of business, the people who are general managers of lines of businesses tend to be fairly impatient people to begin with. They also tend not to try to get a real detailed appreciation of enterprise data center problems. They tend to be focused on, I'm running my business, I need what I need to do it, and you guys provide it. And so it's just traditionally a somewhat tense relationship, and it's going to, I believe, get more tense because they're going to be looking out and saying, gee whiz, I can, one of my guys with a credit card can go to Amazon Web Services and order 20 servers in a cluster and have it up and running in, a day. And if I go to my enterprise data center, I can't do it. Plus, it costs me a lot more once they do.
Right. I mean, and we're seeing these new services rolled out, almost weekly from these companies in terms of new consumer offerings and also these new business-to-business offerings like S3 from Amazon that you mentioned.
Absolutely. And, and then that gets to my third point, which is the cost advantage that the IDCs have over the EDCs. Google, for example, uses commodity servers and that they design themselves. They use free software where possible, Linux. They use their own software. And they've created an infrastructure that essentially doesn't require very much management. And, this year sometime, they're going to have about 1 million servers under management. And so, and they use IDE disks. There are no RAID arrays in that infrastructure, they have an incredible cost advantage because they are using commodity hardware with free and homegrown software to make it all happen. Now they've of course hired hundreds or probably thousands of PhD computer science graduates. And brilliant people who've been working in this area for, some of them for decades, to make this all happen. And that's another piece that's beyond what your average enterprise data center can do.
Right.
So anyways, they've really changed the game, I believe. Now, they haven't changed the game in the sense of, the enterprise data center is going to disappear tomorrow. That's never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
What I suspect will happen is that enterprising general managers of lines of business who want to get new applications off the ground fast when they see there's either a competitive advantage or they, somebody else has raised the bar and they've got to respond, they're going to have, their own IT people going off and looking at Amazon's storage services and Amazon's server services and the other web services they provide to help them get a leg up. And so what you will see happen is that increasingly the new high growth applications may not get into the enterprise data center for years.
They might just bypass it completely.
Is the enterprise data center going to become a graveyard of legacy applications? I don't think it has to be that way, but there's, the way the industry is structured right now, the enterprise doesn't have a lot of options.
Yeah, very, very interesting. I want to change gears slightly, dig into a little more of the underlying technology. You have a very strong background in the storage arena and intermix that with a lot of your posts and things that you comment on. In particular, you have a strong opinion about the best, what I'll call housing for disk drives, particularly away from big disk arrays. And I was wondering if you could just explain that in a little bit more detail.
Sure. I look at this from several different directions, Gary. One direction is a fairly simplistic, you look at your average, big iron array from EMC or Hitachi or IBM, and what you see is that the disk drives represent perhaps 5 to 10% of the cost of the array. And so effectively what's been done over the years is that even though the disk drive vendors have been heroic in driving down the cost of storage, the array vendors have been building, more and more features into their products. And those features are taking up more and more of the cost of the storage. And I think that we're reaching a point where what Google has demonstrated is that you don't need RAID arrays to have high-performance storage. You need to re-architect things from the ground up. But it's, it's possible to take a different approach and get very high performance without RAID arrays. Google's demonstrated that. And ZFS, Sun's new file system, open source file system, is also demonstrating that, which is a technology I'm very impressed with.
Right. So in looking at the balancing some of the the disk I/O, the CPU resources, and the network resources, you point out in your article that the disk is ultimately the most efficient form of communication in terms of the number of instructions or clocks that lead IDCs to focus on having the local disk and then networking these maybe server nodes together. But if an IDC is if a data set is spanning hundreds or thousands of servers, wouldn't the network overhead come into play in terms of finding where the data was across these multiple servers? Can you explain how that works?
Well, that's actually the subject of a pair of posts that I've done one already, and I'm in the middle of writing the second one, talking about Google's big table, what they call their distributed storage system. And they think very hard about this because they want to use commodity products, and now they're using gigabit Ethernet. But the net is that disk drives are really becoming sequential access devices. I mean, their base disk drives are turning into tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds kind of radical, but when you look at how fast the capacity grows, which is 10x every 5 years, and you look at the rate at which the I/O capacity, how many IOPS you can get out of a disk, is growing very, very slowly compared to that. It's becoming clear that we're going to have huge capacity and relatively little opportunity to access it. And so tapes are becoming sequential access devices. So that's what, in particular, we see that Google has done is they use a lot of the same techniques that databases use, high-performance databases use, to group their IOs and turn them into sequential IOs. Big table stores the data in something they call SS tables, and once an SS table is written, it's never changed. And if there is a change to data, they just write a new SS table instead of, you know, doing small update writes to it. It's a really different architecture that these folks are adopting to deal with the fact that disks are becoming sequential access devices and that you've got limited network bandwidth.
Right. And I think you point out that over the last 25 years, you know, when you measure I/O performance per unit of capacity, that's actually a declining metric over time to where at like 1/700th of what we were 25 years ago.
Right. Right. And this is a secular trend. I mean, this is something that nobody has come up with a solution for. That's, I think, part of the excitement over these hybrid drives is the idea that, you know, at least for some level, we're going to be able to get higher IOPS rates for disk drives. But that's temporary. And, of course, I mean, the other thing that I have a lot of interest in is solid-state disk drives, and particularly flash drives, replacing disk drives in, for example, notebooks. But that's not going to happen in an infrastructure like Google, where they've got, you know, many, many petabytes of storage. I mean, there's just no way that even Google could afford flash memory for all that.
Right. So this I/O access cost, because I think we're at a period now where, you know, capacity can, for most practical purposes, be thought of as free or close to free, but the access cost of getting to that I/O is far from free. And one quote that struck me in your article was that you stated that the huge I/O access cost is one of the key factors that led Intel to de-emphasize clock speed and focus on dual-core processors to grow performance, storage not being able to keep up with the CPU. Can you explain in a little more detail what you mean by that?
Well, essentially, every time you have to go off-chip to access memory, the faster the chip is, the more cycles you're wasting waiting for the data to come back from off-chip. And even with DRAM, DRAM access rates have not been keeping up with the increase in CPU clock speeds. So, and not to mention disk drives, which are like really slow compared to DRAM. So the net was that, you know, they had an architecture that they could keep cranking up the clock speeds on, but the performance just wasn't following because from a system level perspective, if you can't keep it fed, it's, you know, it's stalled and you're not getting any performance. So they realized that by going to a slower clock speed and dual cores and, you know, issuing more IOs and, you know, you can do some things with larger caches, that they were able to actually get significantly better performance and not have to drive the clock speed.
Gotcha. Stepping back to enterprise data centers and IDCs, for folks who are managing enterprise data centers but are intrigued and watching perhaps some of the growth taking place in the IDC world, what are some things particularly that you think EDC data center managers could learn from or perhaps put on their roadmaps to make use of some of the positive technology shifts we're seeing in the IDCs?
Well, I think one of the things that EDCs could do today is to investigate Sun's new X4500 server. And I say that because it's a very interesting hybrid that actually looks, in some respects, a lot like kind of the standard deployed Google box, except it's a lot bigger. It's a quad Opteron server, and it's got, I think, 24 disk drives in the box with it. Mm-hmm. And there's no RAID array. It's not a RAID array. There's no RAID hardware. There's no RAID expense. And so you put Solaris on it with ZFS. And ZFS is a combination of file system, volume manager, and RAID array. It actually gives you higher data integrity than any existing RAID system that's out there. And go into the details as to why that claim is feasible. But the key thing is that basically you've got disks and you've got processors and they're connected by fast buses and you don't have RAID controllers getting in the way of the data flow. And the management that ZFS gives you is so much simpler than you get with standard RAID arrays or SANs, because they've implemented storage pooling. And so you just add a disk drive, and that disk drive just gets sucked into the pool, and ZFS takes care of populating it with data.
Interesting.
So you, as a system manager, don't have to do anything. And that's, that's, I'm very impressed with ZFS, and it took Sun 6 years, a team of very smart engineers, it took them 6 years to produce this, and they really started with a clean sheet of paper and said, okay, how are we going to build something that's, enterprise strength that is going to have a long lifespan, and ZFS is it. And I believe that it actually, it incorporates a lot of similar architectural ideas to what Google and Amazon and the other IDCs use. So that's one area that the enterprises can begin investigating what this might mean for them.
Mm-hmm.
Another area is if I were the CIO of Goldman Sachs, I would bring in each of my storage vendors in particular, and give them a thorough beating, because when Amazon can provide storage for a lower cost than me, the CIO of Goldman Sachs can, there's a problem.
Right.
And, the problem is that the storage vendors, in my humble opinion, are very, very comfortable with the margins they've got on their products. They're very comfortable selling all these software add-ons that do necessary things, but that are, complicated and, create all kinds of management overhead for the enterprise data center. And, what the CIO of Goldman Sachs can do is say, hey, look at what Google does. Look at what Amazon does. And, I want you, EMC, Hitachi, IBM, to start creating storage that reflects those realities rather than where we are today. Because we have to remember, storage arrays and RAID was just a solution to a problem. What Google and ZFS and Amazon are demonstrating is there are other solutions to those problems.
Yeah, exactly.
It's time for the storage vendors to, realize that they need to think about changing with the times.
So across some of those IDCs that you mentioned, Google, Amazon, Yahoo, Microsoft, eBay, others, where do you see the interesting battles from a technology perspective, and how would you classify the competitive edge of these companies? Are they content-driven, infrastructure-driven, delivery-driven?
Well, you get into a very interesting set of issues there, because when you look at the history of technology diffusion, different levels of or different types of competitive advantage seem to come into play as markets evolve. It seems to me, though, that if you have a significant cost advantage, and I've written about this on storagemojo.com, as Google has over, for example, Yahoo, if you have that cost advantage, then that gives you the opportunity to wait and pick your battle and go after your competitor whenever it makes sense to. And I think, for example, eBay is very vulnerable from a cost perspective to Google. And I think that's part of the reason that they reached out to Google and said, hey, let's partner and you get some advertising revenue. And, you know, that's decided to buddy up to Google.
Perhaps similar to the price war that Dell initiated based on their supply chain a few years back.
And, you know, of course, or you can, you know, you can provide the same service and just make more money off of it. Or you can, you know, you can do a combination of it. So I think the infrastructure cost advantages are really, really significant. On the content side, that's a whole different kettle of fish. And I'm not, it's not something that I spend a lot of time thinking about, even though I love to consume content myself. I have about 600 DVDs. but I think, you know, I think the basic cost advantage that IDCs have is really going to change the competitive landscape. And when you look at what Amazon is doing with Amazon Web Services and the fact that a little startup can now, you know, with a credit card, build themselves a fairly credible data center through a web interface, you've just dramatically lowered the barriers to entry for new applications and application providers. So I think, you know, I really like Amazon's business strategy and marketing better than I like Google's. I think Google is a terrible marketing company in that, you know, there should be a bunch of people fired there with responsibility for marketing because they're, you know, they're number one in search and they're, you know, number back of the bus in virtually every other area that they're in. But I look at what Amazon is doing with the Amazon Web Services and, you know, leveraging their infrastructure and the cost advantages of that infrastructure to encourage new applications to roll out on their infrastructure. And I think it's a very impressive strategy, and I'm looking forward to learning more about it.
I think that is going to be a really interesting one to watch. Well, thank you very much for taking the time with us today, Robin. We'll be keeping up with Storage Mojo and enjoying your new posts, and we appreciate your thoughts and input about architecting the Internet data center. For Gear 6, I'm Gary Ornstein. Thanks very much for joining us. And today's program will be podcast. For links to Robin's article, visit gear6.com and our company blog, ThoughtPut. Robin, just want to say thanks again to you for joining us.
Thank you, Gary.
And we'll look forward to seeing everybody on the next episode from Gear 6 and our analyst and industry expert spotlights. Thanks very much.